I'm here at Fringe Central at the Edinburgh Fringe with Barbara Landis from Chamber Opera of Chicago. And I'm glad to say there's more opera this year at the Fringe than ever before. Oh, has opera had a kind of revival in recent years, or has it always been popular, do you think?
Well, I do believe it, the popularity depends upon the moment. It seems to go up and down. I know that in Chicago it can be popular, and not everybody's is interested in seeing an opera, but I think as we educate people, they become interested in the art form, but we have to educate them a little bit, you know.
Certainly at the Fringe, you may or may not be aware, but things like Jane Austen adaptations, that's always been very popular in theatre. And so I guess if you want to make opera accessible, this is the kind of thing you need to be doing, isn't it?
It is. And she has the best stories, best love stories.
So how did you choose this one of all of them?
You know, I was looking at a longer story, Sense and Sensibility, but the book was too large. And then there was Persuasion, which had a character called Captain Wentworth. And we had a Captain Wentworth in our family. And I believe we had sailors in our family, you know, because we have both Scottish and English blood, you know. But it was not only that. I always was intrigued by the story. It was just a beautiful love story filled with elements of the Navy, you know. Mm. I've always been a fan of anything of the sea.
Mm. So when you make that decision, so you've chosen that one, and then there's this book, and that's got to turn into, you know, lyrics, that's got to turn into music. What's the journey for that?
Well, at first it started off with a tune in Jane Austen's manuscript, and Scottish tunes and Irish tunes, and then other tunes from the era. And then something just said to me, this is the tune, it sounds like the sea, or this is the tune, it sounds like an argument between characters, or this is the tune. I would just be hit by different tunes that I would hear, and then sometimes we'd make an arrangement of a tune. There were like several arrangers, and I would hear it one way, somebody would hear it another way, and what adaptation didn't work of the music, I would take it over, or I'd have somebody else take it over, and I'd change it to be what I kind of imagined in my mind, the music, you know. So I took all these tunes from the era, from anywhere from the 1700s to early 1800s, and a lot of them are from Jane Austen's book, and I just thought, this is great. And I take Jane Austen's words, and I use as many words of hers as possible, and then I make a libretto from that. And there is a song by Robert Burns, though, by the way. It's a great song. It's beautiful, beautiful poetry. So I think that was the last place we did it. It was really a hit because I think they recognize the poetry is so lyrical and sweeping. So it has like a whole mixture of styles and in the piece from that era.
I've heard that before, that, you know, some composers talk about, you know, not being originators, and that doesn't mean they're not original, but they're channelers of,
right, that's
of
what
stuff.
I'm a channeler. I did take one tune, though, and it was a Scottish tune, and I wrote another Scottish tune to it, and it had it overlap in the piece. I did something like that, because I could hear something, a different tune out of the tune, and then I overlapped it and kind of took liberties with it and made something else out of it. It was an Irish fragment, but I took it, and I took the Irish fragment, and then I made a Scottish tune out of it. For some reason, the Scottish tune was easier for me to come up with. And then I kind of made a different number out of that, you know. It's sung by a couple characters. One is the Admiral Cross wife. She's, wife of an admiral. And then a Captain Wentworth. And he sings the Irish part, and they sing, like, the Scottish melody that kind of combines and weaves. And then we have cello under it and other instruments such as, let's see, cello, piano, I'm trying to think whatever instruments are in that piece. The whole piece is like varies. Sometimes we have like the full orchestra, and sometimes it's just a little chamber orchestra, but we have like 10 instruments. So sometimes it's full orchestra, and sometimes we just pull things out and we just do fewer instruments, and it seems like a bit more variety. That's what I'm finding. It makes it more diverse. So we have so many styles in the piece, but from the era. There's nothing of recent age to music. It's all... And there are folk songs. There's both English folk songs and quite a bit of Scottish and Irish tunes in the piece. Because Jane Austen was very fond of both Irish and Scottish tunes. She had a whole manuscript of Scottish tunes. And so she had like, it must be like 100, I think about 100 tunes at least. Close to it. Yeah, it was quite a bit. And I just love those tunes, and that's why I wanted to kind of put them in, you know.
Barbara, did you imagine yourself in this right from the first moment?
You know, I didn't really imagine myself doing a role, but I had just done a Pride and Prejudice where I was Jane Austen as a character who narrates a piece. And so somebody said to me, well, you know, you really should continue that, make a sequel for your people in Chicago because they wanted a sequel. So that's where it came up. Okay, so I'll be the same Jane Austen character. And this time I walk into the scene because Jane Austen said in her letters, a character almost too good for me. And she goes, it was Anne Elliot, character almost too good for me. And I was like, oh, yes, I become this other character. And then it's like, and I have, besides her, there's many people in the cast. It's like 30 people in the cast. So like kind of, so it's not just me. It's like just full of many people, many songs. We have a great sailor chorus. We have many singers, many solos. I gave everybody plenty of music to sing.
Well, I had a shiver down my spine just watching the promo video, which gives a good impression of what this will be. For the many, many lovers of musicals that are looking in the programme at the Edinburgh Fringe, could you welcome them in for the first time to opera?
Oh, yes. This is a good place to begin because we take tunes that appeal to people. We have one tune called The Pleasure of Love that somebody sings, and it's ya dee 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 dee. And then we take a tune that's called La Folia by, it's like the theme song of the piece. It goes, ya da dee 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 dee. So we take these really lyrical tunes. They're tunes that probably would appeal to almost anybody. They're just beautiful tunes. I always like lyrics and music that have like the sweep of a melody, you know. I don't like anything dissonant. So that's what makes it more appealing to an audience, is having tunes that they like, they can hum. That's what I believe. And music from that period wasn't dissonant. So there's nothing dissonant in this. It's all lyrical. It's just something that will appeal to everybody who likes melody.
And you know, by the sound of it, by the choice of the material, if anyone ever feared opera being not accessible because they found themselves, you know, in the Royal Opera House listening to Italian and not quite getting any of it, this sounds very accessible.
Well, that's because most of it's in English. There's only two selections in Italian, one by Rossini, and it's like, it's one of our characters at a concert sing, and then the Plaisir d'amour, also, which is in Italian. Piacere d'amore in Italian. So those are the only two selections in Italian. Everything else is in English. So that's another way. And music, because there's a lot of folk music mixed in from the period, it makes it a little bit more accessible. Some people have come up to us and say, this is the first, you know, opera. They call it an operetta because there's a lot of dialogue, too. It's Jane Austen's dialogue. They say this is the first operetta they've ever seen, and they liked it. They said to us they really liked it, so that was, I thought that was good. It was an accomplishment. We've been bringing a lot of people in Chicago to the opera. They say that they started with us, and then they move on to other opera in town. But surprisingly, Lyric Opera Chicago, this biggest opera company in Chicago, says, we do really great with your list of people. And I get a lot of people from our list because we bring in these new people, and so we're like the introduction to, you know, to classical music.
What's it like touring opera rather than playing, you know, your home venue?
Well, touring is actually a lot of fun because we get to travel all over. It's not always easy because sometimes we're right in the theater like the day before, and this time many people, they were all delayed on an airplane, so they only arrived just in time for the night before the show, so they were all jet-lagged, and they're all performing and like maybe 2-3 hours of sleep. That's part of the problem of touring, and you can't always get the space until like sometimes just the night before and occasionally on the day. So there are some trials, you know. But pretty much everybody, we're like one happy family, our cast. It seems like we're all like, you know, we're all traveling on a bus, and we're all like kind of these rowdy characters. Americans are very rowdy, you know. The bus driver even said so. We're all like, you know, cheering, and he's telling us jokes, and they're kind of, you know, we're from the colonies, right? We're kind of rowdy, you know, and we're different, you know, in that way. We're kind of obnoxious sometimes, but we have fun.
But when you get into a venue and you stand on the stage and you go, oh, the acoustics here are very different. Yeah. How do you claim that space?
That is hard sometimes, how to claim it. It does feel different, and it seems like you just have to focus your brain on what you're saying. You just have to focus on the words, in my opinion. Just focus on the words and focus on who you are at the moment and don't be distracted by the space. You really have to involve yourself in the character. You have to channel whoever it is or whatever it is, but you really have to really concentrate. That's the thing.
Final question. So you've chosen this piece of work. It's from an author, a well-known author, and I'm going to imagine with you that she has a spirit, and that spirit wanders in and sits in, you know, maybe just the back row discreetly during persuasion, and then she comes up to you afterwards. What do you think she'd say?
Oh, she says to me, "Well done, Barbara." She says, "Well done. That was well done." She goes, she'll sometimes, I feel like she's in my sleep, and she'll say, "Oh, no, you shouldn't go here." She goes, and she'll say in my, I believe I dream of her, you know, of her, because I play her on stage, I dream of her. And so I feel like I incorporate her spirit in me. So I feel like sometimes she's given me comments. She'll show me how to do the role, I feel like, because I feel her in me sometimes. And then sometimes she doesn't like something in the middle of my sleep. For instance, yesterday was just about traveling. We were going to go to Stirling Castle, and we were going to go to Glamis Castle. She goes, no Stirling. She thought it would be too long. She goes, she said, go to Dunatar Castle, and she goes, and go to, I mean, this was interesting, to Dunatar, and then she said Glamis. That was enough for the day. And so we did that.
So she's definitely on tour with you then?
Yeah, she's on tour. I'd like to try to encourage her to be with us, you know.
Sounds like we need no persuasion to go and see Persuasion. So thank you very much, Barbara.
Thank you.